We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in to another episode of The Pod is the Roof, the Field of 68's very own UNC basketball podcast. I am your host, Jacob Karabatsis, joined as always by my clean-shaven, lovely co-host, Riley Davis. Pretty interesting weekend for UNC. We already recapped the insane Tennessee game, some scaries in the Florida State game, and a huge one coming up against UConn. We're going to break all of it down for you guys. But first, Riley, how we doing, man?
I'm good, man. It's got to be weird for the viewers at home to see two olive complexion white boys still. But, you know, we got a little bit of color in us, both wearing black hoodies with, I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm just like looking. I'm like, why do we look? We look way too similar right now.
It's the backgrounds too, man. I don't have my usual background with me, so it's like, you know, unfortunately, people are gonna have to focus on our faces a little more. So it's gonna be tough scenes for him, man. Yeah, it's I'm doing well. I 5 minutes into the second half of the Florida State game, I didn't know how well I'd be doing. It was quite a concerning first 25 minutes of basketball. And then I think a lot of things happened, you know, it's weird because they sparked an insane comeback by running a full court press that I quite frankly haven't seen a UNC team have in their bag in a long time. It's not like they started hitting shots. I mean, they finished the game 22% from deep. But they just forced turnovers, created a bunch of open looks. I thought this was, we talked about it last week, the Hubert Davis sleeper for Coach of the Year. This is one of those, like, Hubert's been in his bag type of games. Mm-hmm. What was your main takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. The press, I think I had someone watching it, one of my friends who is a little bit better at the X's and O's than I am, pointed out that it looked like a diamond and one press that got most of it done. I didn't do the tape review on that, but even when I'd be curious, like even times last year when UNC pressed, we would see it kind of cut into the lead. Like that game at Virginia Tech comes to mind. That was the fourth loss of the four game losing streak that the Heels never recovered from. You know, I would be interested to see like what are the breakdown of the presses that UNC won, that UNC ran last year. But yeah, I would say like the press, the fact that it actually led to a comeback where UNC was able to get build a pretty sizable lead and actually finish the job and win. That seemed huge to me because, you know, over the past two seasons, it seems like there have been multiple games. I mentioned that Virginia Tech one, the one at Wake Forest last year, too, where Carolina probably went down 20 and Caleb Love hit three or four threes in the second half and kept getting it down to like 5 or 6 points. But it never really felt like UNC could get over the hump. It sort of felt like almost meaningless comebacks or too little too late. It was awesome to see them actually pull off a comeback. And I think it's going to give confidence to this group. It's, you know, I would say Florida State is a team that's probably a point guard away from being a really good team. They sort of scream NIT to me. But still, with their size and athleticism, they can cause some matchup issues, especially for a smaller team like North Carolina. So all in all, like, it's good to get through these tough battles in conference, like first conference game coming off of a really emotional win. You know, wasn't pretty, but you'd rather win ugly than lose a, you know, an 80 to 90 point shootout. So I'll take it.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting just because it was like a tale of two tapes. You know, we sat here and watched UNC shoot 48% from deep against what at the time was the best defense in the nation. They scored 100 to beat Tennessee. And then they come out and they can't hit a shot, which you kind of expected the percentage to negatively regress a little bit. But they come out and they can't hit a shot. And all I'm thinking to myself when they're down 48 to 35 is, I'm about to see how good this team is. Because last year, they lose that game by probably 10 plus, maybe even more, because they just – they didn't have what they showed this in this game last year. And it was just, it was one of those things where I wanted to see that UNC was not just going to live or die by the three, that they could actually win a game, that they weren't hitting shots from deep. And,
right,
you know, that's the part. Like, it takes some serious moxie to be missing every shot you're taking just about and actually stay focused. And they stay like, that is one of the most physical and aggressive UNC games I've seen in a while. And that's like all me and you talked about is we just want to see effort. And man, I know that, like, for example, I was talking to our guy G Wizzy about it, and he was like roasting. Of course, he was like, listen, man, you just struggled against the Florida State team and it wasn't pretty. Like, this is a weird time to be in on the heels. But see, I would actually argue that this is the perfect time to be in on the heels, because they could have easily laid down after getting a huge win on Wednesday night and been like, all right, whatever, we're just going to lose this one, move on to UConn. They didn't.
Right.
They're 7-1. They've shown they can win in a multitude of ways. Like, I came away impressed. The only concern I have, which I would like for you to chime in on, letting Florida State shoot 43% from three is not optimal.
Yeah, that was rough. I think, like, as good as the second half was, as encouraged as I felt by how they battled back, yeah, you make great points. Like, again, the fact that it feels like that's the type of games that good to great to elite teams win. Like, you see it every year. It feels like top 10 teams, they're able to fall behind like that and pull off a big comeback. One of the games that comes to mind, this was like 4 or 5 years ago, one of the Cassius Winston Michigan State teams fell down like 25 points against Northwestern, and they reeled off a comeback like that. Like, these type of comebacks, you know, you see it a lot more in the NBA, where a 15 point deficit is nothing. Teams can erase it in a blink of an eye because of just the talent level of shooting, but you still see it a good bit at the college level. It's just, it's usually sort of the upper echelon of teams are able to pull them off. So yeah, I think that was super encouraging. I don't want to minimize that at all, but that first half was about as bad as Carolina's played all season. Maybe that's an exaggeration, because there are stretches of the Lehigh game where they looked pretty weak, and that Northern Iowa game might have been worse. But even Northern Iowa, though, it seemed like there weren't the defensive lapses that happened against Florida State, like multiple uncontested threes. I mean, Jameer Watkins had a step in shot where there wasn't a soul around him, and he's their best player. Like, that's the one guy who you can't lose. And, you know, bad closeouts or guys biting on pump fakes to get that lead to an open shot. It was, yeah, these types of miscommunications that, if that happens against UConn, those leads, they can build a lead and build it and build it and build it. And they have a little more poise and a little better guard play to where they're not just going to turn the ball over on every possession if you throw a diamond in one press at them.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing is I don't want UNC's takeaway from this win to be like, you know, it's okay if we start slow. We've got a press to fall back on, because
right.
you know, I'm fine with pressing. Honestly, from what I saw, like, I think there should be stretches of every single game this year where they throw a press out there, mm-hmm. like, at some mm-hmm. point. But I don't want them to become reliant on it because, like you said, like, we're about to see it these next two games. You cannot do that against UConn or Kentucky. And I know Kentucky just lost to Wilmington. Their guards are still phenomenal. They're freshmen, but they're phenomenal. And then you play a team like UConn, who's very well coached, isn't going to beat themselves. It's going to be a completely different ball game. But, you know, I do want to spend some time on this because I don't see how we can have a pod as the roof episode at this point without bringing this man up. But, like, dude, Elliot Cadeau just absolutely revolutionizes the ceiling of this team. Like, up until the bad pass out of bounds that he kind of sailed a little bit, I think he had mm-hmm. went like 64 straight minutes without a turnover or something like that. This dude's poise. And, like, I don't think people, like, if you're not watching the game, you probably don't get it. Because if you look at the box score other than the Tennessee game, you're looking at it like, okay, whatever. He's mm-hmm. facilitating. He's a point guard. But this dude's energy, and he was such a key part of that press, getting the ball, creating plays, like mm-hmm. getting it out in transition. And then he made some super, super clutch baskets that were just tough drives, like offhand switching to his dom. Like, he just, I mean, I just can't believe that this kid is supposed to be in high school. Like, what, mm-hmm. like, what is, how different is this team if Elliot Cadeau does not reclassify?
We're definitely not 7-1. I'll tell you that much. Speaking of, when do you think the last time UNC started out 7-1 was?
Oh, take dear a guess. God. My guess would be 2017.
You're close. Is the 2017-2018 season.
Oh.
They started out 10-1. Only loss was to Michigan State in the PK-80. I don't know if you remember that game, but they sort of dominated Carolina on the inside.
Oh, they, yeah.
Roy was pretty upset because Roy never,
if I'm not mistaken, that I had to watch Jaren Jackson Jr. go absolutely belligerent in that game. I think that was his freshman year.
I'm pretty sure you're right. Yeah. Jaren Jackson Jr. was in that game. He only had three. He only had 3 points though. It was Joshua Langford that torched us. 23 points, five made threes. But yeah, that UNC team started out 10-1. Oddly enough, sixth best offense in the country that year, 38th best defense. Fast forward to 2024, and we have fifth best offense in the country, 36th best defense. A lot of interesting comparisons that you might be able to draw from those two teams. But yeah, so all that is to say, Cadeau's been a huge part of this hot start. It's funny that, like, I feel like we've talked about how much we love Cadeau. We've talked about how much we love Ingram, while RJ Davis is just, like, scoring nearly 30 points a game over his last like four or five, and we're just crickets about it. And I'll get to RJ in a second, but yeah, what Cadeau did with those late baskets, it just seems like, you know, he's looking to pass, he's looking to get his guys involved, but late in games when we needed a bucket, it just feels like he can get by his man whenever he wants. And yeah, some of those finishes are really crafty. He draws a lot of contact too. I've been really impressed by, he gets more foul calls. It feels like he gets more foul calls than RJ gets.
It's, well, yeah. It's the change of pace, man. Like, I'm not lying to you. RJ is undoubtedly the best scorer on the team, but if there's like 10 seconds or less left on the shot clock, I want Cadeau with the ISO, not Davis, because he blows by almost everyone that guards him. Like, he is just, he's going to get to the rim. He might not make it, but he's getting downhill. And mm-hmm. that's why I just watch it and I sit here and think, and I'm like, dude, as long as he stays healthy, how good this kid's going to be by the middle of January. I mean, we're already seeing the uptick a little bit. It's like, this dude could end up being like a 10-7 or a 10-8 a night, because he's that good, and he's not mm-hmm. even supposed to be in college right now. Like, it's unbelievable, man. And to the point about RJ, I know this sounds absolutely insane, but I think the reason I personally don't bring up RJ is because It's you know, nuts. I think they said he became only the 10th Tar Heel ever to have three straight games of 27 or more points. But RJ would be doing that regardless. Even if this team was 3-5, RJ would be cooking. So I don't know. It's just like, it's weird.
It's almost like he's getting graded on a harsher rubric because we've known he's been a bucket.
Yeah.
Like the man put up 30 points against a one seed Baylor in a tournament game less than 2 years ago. We've seen him do it on the biggest stage. The man had 30 in Cameron and packed up Coach K. Like we've seen him do it for almost half a decade now, to where it's just not surprising anymore. But I do want to give RJ his flowers, because what he's done is special as far as, you know, just a penchant for knocking down big threes. He's improved his finishing around the rim. Like, I think he's looks like he's even added a little craft to his layup package. So yeah, it's again, the criticism all offseason was that RJ and Elliott couldn't work together because of the size. And I don't know if anybody said they couldn't work together, but that was the big knock. And all I got to say is other teams have to guard them too. It's really,
and the
that
on
simple.
Off numbers, like, if you don't believe what we're saying, go look at the on-off numbers. Go look at RJ with and without Trimble. Mm-hmm. The net rating and the offensive rating goes up like 8 points. It's
with nuts. Cadeau. You made a mistake and mentioned Melo's little brother Trimble. You said the on-off numbers with Trimble. Yeah, Melo's brother.
Did I really? That's actually insane. I've just been on a Trimble kick lately. Even whether it's Seth or Melo, I've just been on a Trimble kick lately. I guess that I'm telling you, that tweet I sent you, that dude must watch the pot is the roof, because it'd be dope if Seth Trimble was somehow related to Melo Trimble. Unfortunately, he's not. But
for those who didn't see it, there was a draft Twitter guy who was tweeting something about Seth Trimble's good year so far. I mentioned that he's the younger brother of Melo Trimble, when in fact, younger brother of JP Tokido. Our listeners, there's a 99% chance they already knew that. But yeah. Can I add one last note about Cadeau before we go ahead and get into this UConn matchup?
Yes.
So Cadeau's rate, his free throw rate right now, 64.4% per KenPom. I'm not a huge analytics guy as far as understanding what they mean. I know how to use them to make my point, but I think that means he's getting to the free throw line or drawing a foul 64% of his possessions used, maybe. I think that's it.
I think it's on 64% of his attempts, if I'm not mistaken. And which would make sense, because he does only shoot like 5 or 6 times a game, and he does go to the free throw line a lot.
Fair. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna have to bring in my stats guy Evan Miyakawa to explain this to me like I'm 10. But anyway, looking at the ACC, he hasn't played enough minutes to qualify for the leaders board on KenPom. Trey White's leading the ACC in free throw rate, 65.1, which maybe this shows it doesn't mean it too much because it's a Louisville player. Judah Mintz, number 2 at 65%. Ryan Dunn, number 3 at 63%. So if Cadeau played enough minutes to qualify, he'd be 3rd in the league right now, right behind Judah Mintz. And I don't know about you, but when I hear Mintz, I mean, that dude's entire game is attacking the basket, getting to the line, making the right pass. Like, that's really good company for Cadeau to be in if he's getting to the line at a similar clip to Mintz.
Mintz is
great for this offense.
Honestly, the way Dunn's been playing too, like Cadeau even being in the same stratosphere as them in any offensive category is like, any scoring category, I should say, is kind of nuts. But yeah, I mean, if we're being honest, like, this is kind of an elite time to be the pod is the roof listener, because if you just go back and listen to our preseason stuff, I mean, I'm going to toot our own horns. Like, we've been pretty much dead on. We didn't know they would be this good, but we've been pretty much dead on about how they could be good. Like, we've been dead on about how this team, everyone called us insane for saying they could have a top 10 offense first off, which is just so disrespectful. And I'm taking notes and names, because everyone called us absolute psychos for that.
I got a call out Russell Hainline, aka Duke Better, specifically for that. That's my guy, Russell. Listen to the Crazy Cast, support him. It's a Duke show, but they're especially when Duke loses, it's an elite listen. I'm not going to lie to you. And I let Russell know that, like, hey, when y'all lose, this is incredible. But yeah, he laughed at me on a Heat Check podcast this summer when I said UNC was going to have a top 15 offense. And of course, I had to text him as soon as they moved into the top five offenses after the Tennessee game, sent him a nice little screenshot showing where they're ranked, rubbed it in that his team is having quite the identity crisis right now. And seems like no one other than Jeremy Rhodes could create a basket. So
yeah, it's, you know, that's the thing though, is like we said that this team could easily be a top 15 offense. And everyone was hating. And then we also said all they had to do was be good enough on defense, like top 40. That's exactly what they've done so far. And the formula's led to 7-1. And I would also like to mention we predicted a 9-3 non-con record. All they have to do is go 2-2 in these last four. And that comes to light. And it wouldn't even be terrible losses. If they lose to UConn and then lose to Kentucky or even Oklahoma at this point, like not bad losses. I mean, I truthfully think they will finish this stretch 3-1.
I'm buying it too.
I'm a little worried, and this will transition right into the preview. We're about to get back-to-back angry squads, and I hate that. Like, I wish we could be playing UConn coming off of a win at Allen Fieldhouse. Like, I really, really wish we could, because that's when you could catch them when they're down. If they were 8-0, right, just got a huge win on the road, like, now they're going to be coming out pissed. And then we're going to play Kentucky. They're going to be looking to get another big win because they just lost to Wilmington. So UNC will have their hands full this week. So you're about to see a lot of episodes from us because there's some big ones this week. But, I mean, what is your initial thought after seeing Kansas take down UConn and how, yes, it makes them angry, but how might that translate to some UNC success?
Yeah, I think as far as that UConn game goes, you know, like they did an admirable job getting back in the game after that hot start by Kansas where it felt like they couldn't miss. And, you know, this says, I don't even think I knocked UConn in my rankings because, like, you lose by four at Allen Fieldhouse, who cares? That's, like, basically a win to only lose by four in that building. That building's impossible to win in. Yeah, even looking at, like, it felt like that game that Kansas dominated in transition, but they only scored 12 fast break points compared to UConn's 8. It wasn't like Kansas just ran them off the court, but I think like McCuller in particular looked pretty nimble getting up and down the floor. And I want to say like that, you know, that's a game where we're going to want to see Harrison Ingram replicate something like that. It feels like every single game, Ingram's been able to get a breakaway dunk off of a steal, and that sort of sets the tone. It seems to energize the team. McCuller had a couple plays like that gives me hope that UNC can have Ingram be similarly disruptive with his hands. So I think Carolina's got to get up and down and run. Like UConn's been a great transition team so far this year. They're, I want to say, top 30 in the country. Carolina's, I think, in the 60s. But it's not, you know, not a – I kind of think, I don't know, like I want to say UNC has probably played a tougher schedule to where I trust those transition numbers a little bit. Like, yeah, I mean, UConn's best wins right now are over on a neutral against the very mediocre Indiana team and a decent Texas team. Outside of that, they played a lot of sub 200, sub 300 KenPom teams. And then the Kansas loss, of course. So I would buy, you know, UNC's transition attack is maybe slightly stronger than UConn's. But then when the game gets in the half court, the biggest key, I think, for Carolina is staying disciplined on defense, because UConn, they run a ton of sets. They run a ton of dribble handoffs, off-ball screens, zoom action type stuff, different variations of that. Sometimes they'll have Alex Caravan coming off of a pin down that Cam Spencer sends. Cam Spencer might set a go screen and get open underneath the basket. You have to stay disciplined and communicate, because if you leave Spencer open or you leave Caravan open or even Tristan Newton open, that's going to be some pretty easy buckets. Like you cannot have those lapses that you had against Florida State, because UConn has better shooters, better athletes, better ball movement, better everything, and they're going to make you pay.
Yeah, so that's kind of – that's the two things. Is all right, I will admit, like, I do feel a little bit confident in UNC's ability to make shots in this game simply because nothing fell last game. So, you know, I don't think they're going to come out and shoot 45%, but I mean, I think they're going to give us a modest 33% to 36%. When you look at the formula for Kansas, they won that game because they shot 9 of 14 from three, which this team cannot shoot. So that is truthfully outlandish that they did that. And second off, you lose to UConn almost instantly if you have double digit turnovers. And, you know, we had 13 against Florida State, which sucks. Kansas had 8 turnovers. Kansas shot very efficiently from deep. The key is just going to be, like you said, on defense, you know, communicating, because they do have so many, especially with Castle coming back. It just adds another layer of difficulty to defending this group. So that it does sting a little bit, but I think the communication on offense and just not forcing, like, you can't have those long into the shot clock, give it to RJ with 7 seconds left. He'll hit a couple crazy shots, but like, you have to be smart with the ball. And that's where I think this does become like I think this becomes the true test game for Cadeau, because his ability to facilitate the offense and continue to not turn the ball over and make insanely smart decisions could be the difference in this game. Like, we're going to have some turnovers. We're obviously not going to play a perfect game, but I think if we take care of the ball and we at least just force them to take a few difficult threes, I mean, I really think we match up with them well. Like, we have the size to compete with them. You know, if they do want to play more guards, we've shown a bunch of ability to run out a Trimble, RJ, Cadeau, Ingram, Baycott lineup. So we can kind of match whatever way Hurley chooses to go. You know, I'm worried about an angry UConn team, but I'll be honest, like, I think I'm a little bit more scared of Kentucky. Am I insane for saying that?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM Sportsbook for this college basketball season. We're going to be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks and predictions throughout the college basketball season. And we are going to have special offers for you, the listeners, and the viewers on the Field of 68 each and every week during the season. If you haven't signed up with BetMGM yet, use the bonus code FIELD1500 and you will get up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager on BetMGM Sportsbook. Here's what you got to do. Download the BetMGM app. Sign up using the bonus code FIELD1500. Deposit at least $10 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $1,500 in bonus bets if that bet loses. Just make sure you use the bonus code FIELD1500 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available under one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient for me when I have to go cover games in New York or Philly. When crossing state borders, just log into your existing account instead of having to create new accounts in each state that you go to. And most importantly, I got to let you know, we do have some fun stuff coming up for this college basketball season. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boosts, my personal favorite, parlay odds boosts. So download the BetMGM app today.
Kentucky definitely seems more spurtable, more spurtability, whatever that phrase is, to where they can score in bunches more easily because you can blink and Rob Dillingham can give you 15. And their ball movement's really good. I don't want to overlook the fact, just because they're coming off a loss, though, Connecticut, you still has the fourth best offense in the country. You know, you mentioned that Trimble lineup. I think that's been a bit of a revelation, being able to play like Seth making the progressions to be a threat in the corner and to move really well without the ball and to be good on the offensive glass as well, and a great cutter. Some of the cuts he had against Tennessee, did it again against Florida State, runs the floor well, of course.
He's also a lot more under control now. I've noticed that. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always been a freak athlete, but now he makes the freak athletic plays, but he's under control while doing it. He doesn't look mm-hmm. like he's just freaking out in the air.
Right, right. Yeah, he's got way more poise when he has the ball in his hands. And I don't know how much Stephen Castle's going to play. Like Hurley said today, the implication was that Castle's available. He's going to play, but there will be some restrictions. Sometimes those restrictions don't mean anything, and he could come out and look just as athletic and bouncy as ever and, you know, give us buckets. That's where I think Seth is going to be really important, because Castle's a legit 6'6". And I think you're going to want to have Ingram on Caravan for most of the game. If Castle's in there, you probably want to have Seth in there as much as you can to be able to throw him on, you know, their best wing right now, because I still would say Spencer's better, but like their highest NBA potential wing. Because I think you're going to leave Cadeau on ball probably. That seems to be where he's been best and can pressure a little bit and be, you know, pesky. And he's definitely succeeded more than he has off ball, but. Yeah, I still think this UConn team, I mean, Spencer's apparently a little bit hobbled too, but I just still feel like that shooting combination between him and Carabin is like the scariest. And Tristan Newton, like that trifecta, that's even before we mention Klingon, who still is a really freaking good big man.
Yeah, it's weird, because first off, I would like to say, I think this game ends up being the type of game that we thought the Tennessee game would be. I think this one probably gets slowed down. You probably see both teams taking tough shots, and whoever makes a few more tough shots and wins the turnover battle probably wins. I feel comfortable kind of saying the same thing. Like, the first team to 65 probably wins this one too. Because that's what I do think. Like, when I say I'm more scared of Kentucky, UConn is definitely a better team. But if we force UConn to play our game the way we force Tennessee to play our game, I trust that we can beat them. Whereas if we force Kentucky to play our game, that's exactly what Kentucky wants us to do.
Right, right.
So it's like, it's tough, man. I will be ecstatic to see 1-1 in this stretch. If we go 1-1 and we're 8-2, I don't think our ranking really even changes unless mm-hmm. we get absolutely blasted. I just want to see 1-1. Like, that's the key for me. It's like, if they go 2-0, it's, you know, it's the icing on the cake. But I want to see a close game if we lose. And let me see one win. I'm feeling really good if we're in that spot. Before we move on to Four Corners, I do want to get the final thoughts. Who's your X factor on each side, and what is your prediction?
X factor on UConn side, I feel like it's pretty easy. Just Stephen Castle, sort of the unknown, the NBA archetype projected lottery pick. You know, we don't know how healthy he is. He could be good to go when Hurley's downplaying it. He could be like actually limited, because he hasn't played a game since November 11th. Which last time he played, 17 points, 10, 7 free throws. Like, he's a monster. He's really good. He's a projected lottery pick for a reason. But for Carolina, I think I'm going to cheat and give two X factors. First one is the front court, aside from Armando and Ingram. Like, can UNC get a combined 15 to 20 good minutes out of Jalen Withers and Zaden High? Because I think Ingram's going to need, like, I don't know, like Ingram.
You're kicking Washington out of the rotation, man?
Well, I'm thinking about the four spot particularly.
Yeah.
This might not be Washington's game either, because Klingon just has so much size on him. Maybe we see some Okonkwo. That'd be
okay.
Fun.
Hear me out. I honestly could see Washington getting some runs simply to move Klingon away from the basket. Because if he leaves Washington, we've seen Washington score 8 points in 6 minutes. So
yeah, right.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's a chess match there, offense, defense. But I just think it would be helpful if Zayden and Withers can be serviceable at the four spot to, you know, allow Carolina to go bigger if they want to put Ingram at the three for some lineups to match UConn's size, or even just to give Ingram a break so he doesn't have to play close to 40 minutes. But you need one of those guys to be really disciplined on defense to just play all out and give maximum effort. You can't be blowing any closeouts or anything like that because, yeah, UConn's just going to take advantage of it. So that's X Factor one. Second is RJ Davis, New York kid coming to the Garden. I just checked. UConn doesn't have anybody on their roster from NYC. I guess technically RJ's from a little bit north of the city, but still, you got to think he's going to have a ton of family there and be ready to go in the Garden. And it bodes very well for another for a 27-point outing.
I mean, look, all I'm saying, the last time we saw an undersized, talented guard, of course my camera's blurry now, so give it a second, but last time we saw an undersized, talented guard in the Garden, your mind goes straight to Kemba Walker. So
my mind actually went straight to Marquise Noel, but I get what you're saying.
I mean, listen, that's kind of treasonous. I'm not going to lie. If you're thinking Noel over Kemba Walker,
Marquise Noel was so good last year and he did it in the Garden, but I'll get us back on track.
That's true. It's like the UConn comparison too, but I don't know, man. I don't think the streak ends on Tuesday. Regardless of what happens, I think we get 27 plus again. I do.
I think we're going to see that from RJ. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think UNC wins. I think UNC wins by like three and it comes down to the wire. But yeah, I'm picking Carolina in it.
So X factor wise, on the UNC side, I guess I'll be cheating too by taking two. I mean, I think it's just the guards, the rotation of four guards, because if they don't turn the ball over, it's very hard for me to imagine UNC losing this game. Like if they keep the turnovers to like 10 or 11 or fewer, very hard for me to imagine them losing this game, because I do think that in a half court offense, they are better than UConn. Like, I don't think anyone would dispute that. It's just don't give up transition buckets. Don't let them win the point off turnover differential battle. So that's my X factor for us. For UConn, I mean, it kind of sounds a little insane to call this man an X factor, because like coming into the year, we kind of had like envoy hopes for this man almost. But I do think it's clinging, because the way he's played defensively has been incredible. And Armando has looked like Armando again the last couple games. If he's able to limit that and really affect him defensively, whoever wins that big man battle, very big for their team. Because if Baycott is able to like get him in early foul trouble, huge for UNC. If Klingon shuts Armando down and we start to get to that point where we're relying on everyone else, I could see us taking some very bad shots, and then that's huge for UConn. So that would be my X factor, and I am with you. I think UNC is going to win this game 76-71. That is my final prediction. I do think it'll be a close one. I just think that the way UNC is playing right now and the flaws I saw in the UConn offense a little bit, obviously it's without Castle, but against Kansas, you know, Kansas is a great defensive team, but I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be about who can make more shots in this one. And I just trust UNC to make more shots than honestly just about anyone in the country right now. And, you know, you could call it bias, but the thing is, how can you watch this team? You cannot name me another team that drops 100 on Tennessee. And I'm going to probably still be saying that 2 months from now when UNC has an awful offensive outing, that I'm just going to go back to us dropping 100 on Tennessee. But yeah, man, we're on the same page, man, per usual. And every time we've been on the same page this year, knock on wood, good things have happened.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. If anybody calls it bias, like we've been realistic this whole offseason into the year. We talked about this team's potential weaknesses. I think we both had similar expectations for this year. You probably were a little bit higher on the heels than I was going into the season, but you know, we've both been watching UNC basketball for a while. We know a good Carolina team when we see one, and this is, I'm confident this is a good team. So.
Oh, there is no doubt in my mind that this team, this feels like Carolina basketball again, and the talent is there. It actually feels like we have a few NBA guys on the team again, which is great. This is the deepest Carolina team we've had in a while. Hubert has just been outstanding. Like, Hubert has been one of the best coaches in the nation up to this point, which I never thought I would be saying that. Like, you know, eight games into the season, like, he's been fantastic. And yeah, like, even the one loss they have, like, I cannot blame Hubert for that game. Like, that was not on him. So he's been great. It's fun, man. I genuinely don't see a reason this shouldn't be a second weekend of March team unless something crazy happens. I'm still not necessarily sold on a title run just yet, but I am sold on a second weekend. Yeah, I'm just glad. It feels good that Carolina basketball is back. Now let's get in, speaking of Carolina basketball, to our four corners. I'm assuming anyone that listens to this, probably a diehard college basketball fan, as Riley and I are. You know what happened this weekend. This was one of those weekends where everyone's true colors were shown, and we were basically informed by a lot of mid-majors and a lot of unranked teams that, hey, this season is wide open and there's nothing you can do about it. Bunch of upsets over the weekend. It was nuts. So we're going to give you two teams we're not worried about losing and two teams that it might be time to worry about and hit the panic button on. Riley, I will give you the first pick here, sir.
A team that I'm worried about or team I'm not worried about?
Whatever order you see fit, I will follow your lead.
All right. I want to talk about Auburn for a second, and that might seem out of left field because it's like, did Auburn even have high expectations going into the year? Personally, I thought they were going to be a really good team. I've had them ranked in my top 25 all year. I picked them to win the SEC and love their combination of a really good front court, Jani Broome, Jalen Williams, and love their back court with Aiden Holloway, a freshman coming in, Denver Jones, transfer from FIU, Trey Donaldson, former top 100 kid, stepping into a feature role a little bit. I thought this team looked awesome in the first game of the year, losing to Baylor by 6, and they had a lead late. And they've basically played a bunch of bad to mid teams since and just lost on the road at App State. And I am very, very slightly worried about Auburn. App State's a good team. I think, you know, there's a decent chance that we have some Carolina fans who listen who have some overlap with App State ties and might already know this. But Dustin Kearns is doing a fantastic job with that program. Like, he has them contending in the Sun Belt most years, which I don't know if that's really ever been the case in App State's basketball history. won 19 games 2 years ago, 16 last year. We haven't seen App have this success since the late 2000s. But that being said, like, they led this game against Auburn wire to wire, pretty much. Like, they took the lead in this, I think, late first half and never looked back. And that alarms me. Auburn shot 3 for 27, and they're a team where the 3-point shot is just paramount to their identity. So,
hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with that. You know, I'm an App State stan because they are led by a Charlotte and Northside Christian legend, Donovan Gregory, senior guard. It's my guy. But
He was hooping against Auburn.
Nah, he's good, bro. Like, you know, being boys with a bunch of guys over at Gaston Day, you know, my guy Nate Hinton, my guy Quan McClooney, a bunch of super high-level basketball players. They used to play Northside Christian, and Donovan Gregory was always – him and Rajon Tucker was an absolute movie in high school. So, That was always fun to see. I'm going to stay in the SEC here. This team is 6-2, but dude, you can't convince me that Texas A&M is a good basketball team right now. Wade Taylor is a great basketball player.
Wade Taylor rocks.
They are not a good basketball team. Like, they have played competition twice this year, and in both cases, they have been beaten at every level of the game. I get it. It's easy to lean towards a team that does have an All-American caliber guy like Wade Taylor. But, dude, they are struggling. Like, they get bruised inside. They only scored 47 points against a Virginia team that looked awful just a week and a half ago. FAU, I'll forgive them, because FAU is back to looking like an absolute powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I just haven't seen anything from this team to make me think, like, okay, when Texas A&M gets into conference play, they're going to be just fine playing against all these insane teams in the SEC.
Yeah, I don't know if they got anybody outside of Wade Taylor who can get you a bucket. Who knows when Tyrese Radford's coming back? That's huge for them. Yeah, as ACC guys, we remember how good he was for Virginia Tech, like a rebounding machine as a 6'1", 6'2 guard. That dude's insane. Like, how he's able to get the most out of his frame like that. But yeah, and again, we've, you know, staying in the ACC, I guess we've seen our team struggle to top 50 at John Paul Jones Arena. Like, in theory, it's like, maybe shouldn't knock them too much for that loss at Virginia. But I mean, Virginia's good. I think they're a back end top 25 team, but it's, and Ryan Dunn might be the best defensive player in the country, but this just doesn't feel like a Virginia team of old. That's,
no,
I don't know.
I mean, I guess the argument I would make is if you just look at the top 25 right now, I'm pretty confident in 20 or 21 of those teams' abilities to beat Virginia, and Texas A&M is not one of the teams I feel confident in doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just bad, man. 59-47, not a good look. Like, someone get Wade Taylor help. That's what I'm asking here.
All right, I'll take it to a team that I'm not concerned about, and it's Kentucky. Well, once again, this turned into an SEC podcast, but yeah, we hit on it some with their spurt ability and the NBA guards, how good Trey Mitchell's been for them is just a do-it-all big. They just got Aaron Bradshaw back. He's knocking off the rust, so they'll have a little more size. Like, some of these losses, like the one at Wilmington, might happen from time to time, because it's a really young team aside from Mitchell and Reeves. They play a ton of freshmen. And there's a chance that at some point in mid-January, like guys like Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham and DJ Wagner could hit that freshman wall, and they might lose a couple more games that they should win. But I'm still confident, just based on the way this team is playing offense, they're going to be a threat in March. And, you know, historically, Cal has done a really good job of getting like these freshman one and done types to buy in on defense. They're not great defensively right now, but I think that'll change come like late conference play.
I'm with you, man. Also, they're going to continue to integrate Bradshaw and just get better. So, I mean, anyone hitting the panic button on Kentucky, like, they're young. They're going to lose games that they're not supposed to lose. So I'm not worried about Kentucky at all. Another team that I'm not worried about in the slightest is Marquette. Like, I understand they lost a game to Wisconsin, and you know, Wisconsin, they're 6-2. They've looked pretty solid outside of the two losses, but man, this Marquette team is just awesome, and they just didn't have it. But Cam Jones is a freak. Tyler Kolek is probably the best point guard in the nation. Like, I love Shaka Smart. So, I mean, anyone that thinks Marquette is in trouble, don't just go ahead and put that take in the back of your mind. Because I promise you, they're going to be in the top 10 for almost the entire year, and they're going to be fine in the Big East. So I'm not worried about Marquette at all.
I'm slightly more worried about Marquette than I am Kentucky, but that's because I just generally distrust Shaka. Though Shaka's great in the regular season. Oso was so bad against Wisconsin. That made no sense to me because, I mean, Oso's been incredible this year. Like, he does everything you want in a modern big. Like, he's looked like is it insane to say he's looked like a fringe lottery pick up until that game?
Yeah, I mean,
the offensive skill and rim protection combo, like
watching what he did against Purdue alone, I think makes him in lottery pick consideration.
Yeah. So they need to get hopefully just a one-off game for him, because he's for real. Like if you haven't watched Marquette yet, yeah, Colet gets all the headlines because he's like the hard-nosed New England Caucasian dude. But like,
oh, dude, where's Chris Collinsworth when you need him? He's gritty. He plays the game the right way. That's what they say about Tyler Colet.
But I feel like Iguodaro is like the secret superstar of that team. Just what he does with his passing, and his defensive aptitude. So,
could we just, for the sake of being absolute petty haters for this last team we're worried about, could we just hit a 3-2-1 and say it at the same time? Because I know we're thinking of the same team, and this goes out to the crazy cast, man.
All right, 3-2-1.
Duke. Come on, man. Y'all might be trash. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I generally have a rule that I don't really talk trash to Duke until UNC beats them. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But it's really tough not to right now when they're like in the exact same position that UNC was this time last year.
Here's my thing. I'm fine with bantering Duke just simply because, one, unlimited banter on us last year. Like, we get it. Y'all were hurt because of the shot in the Final Four. It's fine. There's no need to take it out on us for having a bad season. But I'm also fine with it because, bro, it's Duke and UNC. If UNC was 3-18 heading into a Duke game, they'd still have a chance to beat Duke. So, like, Duke can beat us regardless of how good they are. But I'm just saying, man, it's time to take a look in the mirror. First off, I do want to say this. I hope Tyrese Proctor is fine. Like, I don't care if you're a UNC or Duke fan and wish an injury on the opposing team's players. I just think you're a really crappy person. But, yeah, it's just, dude, first off, they're predictable. I mean, they're just not, like, they do the same thing. They do an awful job of running actions for their shooters. Like, they have some of the best shooters in the nation. They run zero actions for them. And it's just like, every time I watch them play, it seems to me like they're very, very slow and they're not decisive in their actions. And then it ends up being Roach and Filipowski freelance pick and roll to see how to see how the shot clock ends. And they're both great players, but that's just not going to win you. That's just not going to win you basketball games. And I do think that part of it, like, you know, like our guy G Wizzy, second name drop of the pod, said, like, I do think they're a little soft. Like, they don't have that Harrison Ingram that's like up in people's faces, flexing on people, trying to get into some beef. Like, they're making TikToks. So, I mean, unfortunately, they just need to toughen up a little bit. But, man, y'all were talking about Huber. I think it's time to look at y'all's coach for a little bit, man.
Hey, let's enjoy it while we can, because, again, I'm still – there's a – decent to pretty good chance that they get it turned around and we're sad.
The thing is, that's why I wanted to do it, because, like, I have no doubt in my mind that Duke is still a top 15 team. They have way too much talent.
I still don't, but I think they're a little more in trouble than that. I think the ceiling's there for them to get back to like top five. I think the ceiling's there for them to be top 10.
The only thing that makes me hesitant to not think that is the way Shire got them turned around by the tournament last year was pretty dang impressive. And maybe he's just like one of those late bloomer coaches. Like, he's not going to be good in the non-con. And maybe that's what it is. It's going to be interesting. I still think they're good. I still think them and UNC will split this year. I don't think, yeah, you know, UNC is going to wipe the floor with them or anything, but it's a UNC basketball podcast. And you cannot simply expect us to not talk our shit when UNC is better than Duke. Like, look, man, it's just a fact. Like, unfortunately, I watched Georgia Tech run the same exact Spain PNR play 7 times in a row and you couldn't stop it. Like, that's coaching.
Hey, it's the same thing they couldn't stop in 2022 in Cameron. Like, we ran that same Spain pick and roll over and over and over again.
I'm telling you, man. Let me and you go coach a basketball team, and all we're going to run is Spain and horns variations, and we might win 20 games. But Yeah, so I'm going to go to the other team that I'm not worried about at all. They only have one loss, but I'm still not worried about Miami. I know they got embarrassed by Kentucky, but, like, dude, their guards are just too good, and they're too experienced. They're not young. Norchad is an elite big. Mm-hmm. I love Larinaga. So it's like, man, they got embarrassed. Cool. They're 6-1. Like, they're going to be fine. I still think they're just a shoe-in for top four in the ACC. I'm not worried about Miami in the slightest.
Mm-hmm. Do I have one more, or are we done?
You do have one more. You've given us the we've given two worries and one not worry. That was my second not worry. What's your second not worry?
Purdue. Like, oh, I know some of those same problems surfaced. I think Braden Smith had 6 turnovers against Northwestern. It came out on the night that we recorded this and took it to Iowa. It's not like Iowa's world beaters, but they seem to let out some pent-up aggression against them. Edie's a cheat code. I think Braden Smith is way better than he showed against Northwestern, and he's got plenty of time to just continue to grow from this. I mean, I know you can say same mistakes he made last year, but it's a good thing that, like, he's still a sophomore and still scratching the surface of his potential. Yeah, I mean, I still think Purdue might be the best team in the country. I moved them down to 3 in my rankings out of, like, obligation, but yeah, I still kind of think they're the best team in the country.
I'm with that. Also, like, personally wasn't a fan of what they fouled Lance Jones out on. I thought it was a pretty bad call. Not saying it's a guaranteed win if he doesn't foul out, but, like, certainly improves their chances. Also, it's college basketball, and any team that has a player like Boo Booey can beat you on any given night. Like, he's elite, and he played like an elite guard. Like, that's just all there is to it. Yeah, I'm not skeptical of Arizona by any means, but I am just a little bit like, was the Duke win as impressive as we thought? It's looking less impressive as time goes on. They deserve the number one ranking. That's not what I'm saying at all, but it's going to be interesting to see. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got, man. We're going to be dropping this on Tuesday morning. So make sure you're listening, because you're going to have about 12 hours until the tip off of the big game. And you need to hear our insight, man. It's been a pleasure, Riley, per usual, man. You got anything you want to tell the people before we go?
By the time they're listening to this, I should have a piece on Elliot Cadeau up for Heat Check CBB. So follow me on Twitter. You'll see it tagged there. Yeah, make sure you tune in to us for your reaction. Hopefully the next time you listen to us, we will just be insufferable for non-UNC fans, because we'll be talking about UNC being a top 5 team and a national title contender after a resounding win over UConn. But hey, if it doesn't happen, if we lose, vibes are still going to be good. We still believe in this team. We still like this team. And that's it, man. I'm ready to get out of here.
I'm with it, man. Like he said, he's dropping something on Heat Check, so y'all better go check that Heat. Until next time, we'll be talking to y'all about the UConn game in the next episode. Everyone be safe.